Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a rulemaking hearing held in accordance with Section 24-4-103 of the State Administrative Procedure Act. The date is June 30th, 2008, and the time is 2:08 p.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. And my name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State. I'll be conducting the hearing on behalf of the Secretary of State, who I think will be joining us either in person or will be listening online. The rulemaking hearing is in accordance with the notice of rulemaking that was published in the Colorado Register on June 10th, 2008. Let me first make some other introductions of the people at the table with me. To my far left is Wayne Munster, the Deputy Director of Elections for the Secretary of State. To my immediate left is Andrea Geiger, a legal specialist with the Elections Division. And to my far right is Melody Marbaba, Assistant Attorney General with the Attorney General's Office. The purpose of today's hearing is to take public comment on the rules that have been proposed. These are various rules that have come up as a result of questions that the Secretary of State's office has been asked, or in some cases these rules arise because of legislation that was adopted this year. And I shortly am going to kind of go through a summary of the rules, but I first want to dispense with the preliminaries. We do have sign-up sheets on the table by the back door. Anybody who wishes to testify, please do provide your name and who you represent on the sign-up sheets. This is a formal rulemaking hearing. It's recorded, and it's also being broadcast over the Internet. When we issued the notice of rulemaking on June 10th, we had an initial draft of the rules, and last week we published an updated version. And the version that we'd like to work off of today is dated June 25th. So it has page and line numbers, which I think will be helpful as far as directing your comments to particular page and line numbers of the proposed rules. But please be sure that you're looking at the June 25th version of the rules. Before I turn to public comment, I would like to take, say, about 5 minutes and go through the proposed rules. And I'd like to explain a little bit about where some of the rules came from. I hope that will be a little bit helpful. There are several rules, and I'll largely go through the rules in order in which they appear in the June 25th draft. There are several rules that are intended to further the implementation of the statewide voter registration database, the SCORE system, and those are amendments to rules 2.5.3, also rules 26.4.2, and 26.4.4. Those last two rules deals with provisional ballots. There are proposed amendments to Rule 2.12 that deals with the address confidentiality program. And I'm just walking through the rules, Mr. Secretary. The amendments to Rule 2.12 are in response to legislation adopted this year, House Bill 1274, which requires that for participants in the address confidentiality program, that election officials are required to keep confidential the county and the voting precinct number as well as the address. There's a proposed new Rule 2.14, which is intended to clarify the effective date of a voter registration application when it's received by mail at the Secretary of State's office. Currently, there's a gap in the law and the rules on what the effective date would be. There is a proposed new Rule 2.15, which is intended to clarify when a county clerk and recorder may cancel the voter registration record of an elector who has moved and registered in a different county. So there are statutes that provide for canceling the voter registration in the original county when a voter moves. But the purpose of the rule is to clarify or to protect against inadvertently canceling the voter registration of someone else who has the same name and birth date. So we're trying to provide a little bit of protection there in case there's typographical errors or some other kind of mistake that might be made. New Rule 2.16 is somewhat similar. This rule deals with cancellation of voter registration when the elector shows up in either the felon list from the Department of Corrections or the deceased list from the Department of Public Health and Environment. Again, the statutes require canceling the voter registration in those cases, but we do want to make sure that we don't erroneously cancel the voter registration of someone who is who appears to be a match but really isn't. There are amendments to Rule 8 concerning watcher eligibility requirements. Here we are trying to clarify that the watchers designated by the political parties need not be a resident of the county in which he or she is designated as long as the person is an eligible elector in Colorado. And the rule is also intended to establish what kind of access a watcher may have at a polling place. New Rules 8.14 through 8.17 clarify the designation of watchers. In particular, what we're trying to do there is clarify that a designated election official must certify, if this is not discretionary, the DEO must certify a person appointed by the party or the candidate or the committee. On the other hand, the rules are intended to clarify that the DEO designated election official may remove a watcher if that person is disruptive. The amendments to Rule 12.3.4b2 are technical clarifications concerning the mail ballot plan. There are amendments to Rules 12.4.11 and 13.7 that deal with the mail ballot return envelope. Previously, the Secretary of State had adopted a rule that required a flap to cover the signature on the outside of the envelope. That was overturned, basically, by House Bill 1128 this year. So the purpose of these changes is to reflect the passage of House Bill 1128. New Rule 20.4 deals with the verification of initiative petitions. It's intended simply to restore a rule that was in place last year that was inadvertently dropped when we recodified and reorganized the rules dealing with petition checking. So this rule got dropped, and I think it's being restored in its original form. There are a number of amendments to Rule 27, which deals with uniform ballot counting standards. These rule changes are the result of a lot of work on the part of the staff of this office and the county clerks to try to update the rules concerning voter intent and also requirements for alternative voting or alternative counting methods. And we'll probably get into that a little bit more, I hope, later in the discussion today. New Rule 29.12, this is a rule that's intended to implement amendments to Section 1-8-114.5 that were made by House Bill 1128 on the subject of signature verification devices. House Bill 1128 requires the Secretary of State to establish procedures for signature verification devices. The amendment to Rule 30.1.6 is simply a technical clarification to correctly designate the U.S. Federal agency that issues Medicare and Medicaid cards. new rule, or excuse me, rule 44.6.3 is repealed, and that's because it duplicates rule 44.6.4. There's an amendment to a proposed amendment to rule 48 that relates to voter challenges, which is really just a technical correction to some rules that were adopted at the last election rulemaking earlier this year. There is a proposed new rule 49 that deals with the voter registration information system. Specifically, there's two basic purposes there. One, to suggest who is the legal custodian of the voter registration information for purposes of the Open Records Act. And secondly, to deal with the fees that can be charged for voter registration reports. And then finally, there's a proposed new Rule 50 that deals with username and privilege assignments under the SCORE voter registration system. So with that, I was hoping that would be somewhat helpful. In any event, I'd like to turn to public testimony, and I'll just work off of the sign-up sheet. The first person signed up to testify, I believe, is Jack Arrowsmith and Sherry Mulfelt. Welcome, and if you will state for the record who you are and who you represent.
Hi, my name is Sherry Mulfelt. I'm the Douglas County Election Manager.
I'm Jack Arrowsmith, Clerk and Recorder in Douglas County. Thank you for the opportunity this afternoon to talk about the rulemaking. We're going to start with 8.71. That's on page 3 of 1636. The rule states, to the extent possible, watchers shall be allowed physical, visual, and auditory access when observing the election process. I have concerns about a couple of things with this particular rule. When it talks about the election process, to me that means many, many things, not just simply the counting of ballots, et cetera, et cetera. And I believe that without some further clarification, someone who was a watcher could really interpret that in any number of ways. It's saying watchers shall be allowed physical, visual, and auditory access. Visual access could mean watching somebody how they are voting. It's certainly visual access. In addition to that, many of the counties have spent dollars preparing a voting area that is established to allow people to watch the voting process. In Douglas County, we have built a glass booth, so to speak, which we had used in the past to allow people to observe what's going on in that room. When the rule says be allowed physical access, again, that becomes unclear to the watcher. Should then any watcher who requests access to that very secure area, should they be given physical access to that area? So I think there needs to be further definition in terms of how this works, and it may need to go almost county per county based on what we've used in the past. Does this qualify under the new rulemaking?
No, that's I'm going to talk a little bit about 27-7.2.
Sherry, before you do, could I ask one question about while we're on that rule?
Sure.
You know, I know a number of counties do have kind of the approach of having a glass booth or like a glass viewing area. I'm wondering about the auditory access. I mean, can people on the other side of the glass, can they hear what's going on now with your setup?
They cannot. We've had some confusion in this area whether or not we were to broadcast the auditory aspect of it. We believe we could certainly provide that in very short order if that was the requirement. But at this point, they cannot hear the auditory.
Okay. Thank you. Sherry?
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you see any concerns about secrecy if they do have audio?
because when discussions with the parties.
And one of the reasons we were concerned about auditory is that in that ballot counting room, we are using equipment that requires passwords, etc. And that had been our concern in the past, that if they were talking about passwords to sign into the equipment, we felt that that was problematic in order to broadcast that. You know, the auxiliary discussion that goes on during that time is probably pretty unentertaining, but we were only concerned about the passwords that might be exchanged during that.
So there's no concern about voter privacy. I was imagining trying to verify provisionals, you know, and somebody saying, oh, no, this is really Stephanie so-and-so, and, you know, now you know how a person, that they had to vote a provisional.
Absolutely. There are those processes that we would certainly want to restrict or perhaps ensure voter privacy on, and provisionals is one of those areas. My concern with auditory, additionally, is recording devices, and we want to make sure that we're careful about people recording that information. What about photographing and filming? I mean, it's one thing to allow someone to observe. It's another thing to allow people to tape in any form, whether it's visual, auditory, or otherwise. So the provisional is a concern.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so on to 27.7.2. That was a little confusing to me as I read it. It says a ballot that has been marked in a target area that partially extends into another target area or areas shall not be counted for that office or ballot measure. So it sounds to me like nothing should count, and I'm not sure that was really the intent of that rule.
I think it was the intent
that nothing count when the X goes into multiple
target areas. Yes.
Interesting.
Is that a concern for you?
Well, in other areas we talk about voter intent, and so that becomes in direct conflict with other areas that we talk about voter intent. So, yeah, I think it is in conflict with some of the other rules as they're written.
Like any other rule, it's hard for one statement to fit all. If the voter is marking a very dark black box in an area and a piece of the tail happens to hit another area, almost anybody can tell what the voter's intent was, but this rule seems to say we can't count either vote, the one that we think the voter wanted as well as the yellow.
And, you know, Wayne, to address your question, 27.7.4 further down indicates when resolving an overvoted race, which ultimately that's what the extended mark would do. It would create an overvoted race. The marks indicating the voter's intent shall include, but not be limited to, circling the candidate's name and strikeouts or correction of choices. So that kind of contradicts one another.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about 27.7.5.3 on page 11 of 16. Again, this is during a recount of votes or during the initial count for hand-counted paper ballots. To me, this also contradicts another area in rulemaking. So I had some concerns about that because this indicates that the written name of the write-in candidate in the write-in space shall be counted whether or not the target area is marked. However, in 27.1.8 of the current rule, or point 9 of the proposed rule, it states the voter physically writes the name of the legally qualified write-in candidate and properly marks the ballot according to the voter, to the instructions provided to the voter. So again, it's contradicting.
Okay.
Last, we'd like to talk about Rule 27.8 generally. This is the written plan for alternative counting methods. We think that generally this is a good thing to allow for alternative counting methods, but part of the problem as you go through that myriad of different rules that apply to that, it really specifies so many specifics that as you look at the 64 counties across Colorado, there may be nuances from county to county. Perhaps it is understandable to open the ballot box in the polling place in some counties where it might not be appropriate in others based on the circumstances. So what I would suggest for this area is that the Secretary of State in general define what kind of security we're trying to put on the ballots, and as long as the county is able to comply with that general security requirement, that we would be allowed to use alternate counting methods. Again, we're all trying to get security for the ballots, but it may look or feel different from one county to the next.
What would, help me understand, like, what would be an example? Do you mean just like limit the rule to seals, for example?
What security procedures? What are we attempting to do with the rule itself? What are we trying to do? We're trying to keep the ballots secret. We're trying to make sure that there's a chain of custody when those things. So in general, let's talk about what those security procedures are. But as they're defined for a particular county, I find that this is so restrictive that it might inhibit a county from really producing the kind of election that we're trying to get at.
I think I would add, I just believe they're too granular.
Mm-hmm.
They go too deep, and so it really restricts. You know, I personally don't think it's, I think that the security would be better if we didn't open the ballot boxes in the polling place. If we left them secured and sealed and transferred them secured and sealed with the original seal, rather than open them in the polling place, remove them.
Okay.
That's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as I said, that might be different from county to county in terms of what process best fits that county. Some counties, the polling place is the clerk's office.
Okay, thank you. Wayne?
You know, the whole point of that portion was to make sure that the ballots that are in that box get to their destination. And it's a common theme with all of the input that we got. Nobody really cares for the idea of opening the ballot boxes in the polling place. So I'm struggling, how do we give the public perception that these are secure in transport? What can we point to if, let's say, it's a close race? What can we point to? Would it be just logs and a seal, or do you have any other ideas that would calm the fears of lawyers and media?
Well, if I may, it's not just the logs and the seals. It's the process as a whole. And that's where I think sometimes we lose sight, is that we have bipartisan judges transferring those documents. We have seals. The original seal that was placed on it in the office is the same seal that it's coming back sealed up with.
Mm-hmm.
We have individuals who have sealed the box initialing it. We have the people receiving the box initialing it. We have the people transferring the box initialing it. It's been the same seal all along. And those seal logs are kept with the ballot box. So I think it's the process as a whole, not any one piece of it. You know, there are witnesses that these ballot boxes, and I think it makes more sense and is more transparent to maintain the integrity of that seal than it is to take it in a back room, empty it, and then transfer those.
Sure. And you know the parties are going to want a watcher to ride along with these things.
They already do. They have
they do.
Judges that are appointed from the board of, from the assembly process.
That's true. Okay, thank you.
Chairman, are these judges required to be present when the ballot box is transported? through the central count?
They are.
Okay. Yes.
And the only difference now is, I think, that's happening at the end of the after the polls close, and the purpose of the rule is to allow for transfer of the ballots throughout the day.
Correct.
So, but there would be judges available to travel along with the ballots throughout the day.
Yes.
There would be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They're appointed, to that function, just like a poll book judge is appointed to the function of poll book, or, a supply judge. They're called a courier judge.
Okay.
That's good.
Thanks.
No, that
okay.
was answer my question.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing for me.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very much appreciated. Michael Scarpello.
Good afternoon. Michael Scarpello, Director of Elections, City and County of Denver. I will kind of sound a little bit like a parrot, because I'm going to agree with most everything that Jack just said, with a few more additions. First off, Rule 8.7.1, I would agree with Jack that we have no problem being transparent. In fact, we've constructed we just moved into a new facility here just a few weeks ago, where we have windows showing every step of the process from the time the ballots are received, signatures are verified, the ballots are opened, they're counted, ballot duplication. We have windows where everyone can see every piece of that process. We would be hesitant to allow physical access to those areas because it's a security risk, frankly, to have lots of bodies traipsing in and out of these areas where we have card key access and everything else. And then secondly, the auditory access. We don't really know that we would want to provide. It's not as though we oppose someone listening in to what we're doing, but we don't have those capabilities right now. And if this rule were to be imposed at this point, we have no way to comply other than to let people into those rooms. Now, if this were at some future date, I suppose we could provide some sort of, microphone type of device. But that's very expensive, not only, for Denver, but for any county that does not have that already in their plans. Rule 27.7.2, once again, I agree with Jack on this one. Ballot that has a mark in the target area and that happens to stray into another area, a lot of people use check marks. And it might stray into a second mark. It seems to me that if we can interpret the voter's intent, I would hate to negate a person's vote in that case. Rule 27.8.2.2, this is one that Jack didn't mention. It requires the use of four copies of a transfer log. We just think that that's difficult, number one, to have something quadruple, four copies, and it's expensive and it's unnecessary. We just don't feel as though that we need to. I think it calls for a mailing one with the transfer case, one with the, I can't remember, but there's four different copies that we just think is excessive. And it seems to me that rules like this, they kind of call into question the trust of our workers. And each one of these workers, we've already got all these other things in place. We've got seals and we've got a Democrat and a Republican traveling together, and this is just yet another requirement on top, and it just seems excessive to me. 27.8.3.1, each polling place shall have available use of at least two ballot boxes. We certainly appreciate the intent of this rule, because I think the intent is that we never want to have a ballot box that's so full that we can't get a ballot into, have high turnout. But these ballot boxes are expensive, anywhere from $80 to $100 each. And to have two at every polling place is rather expensive. And we think that maybe a different route to that would be to have one metal ballot box on location and then have a transfer case available in case that ballot box gets full, where we could break it open, put the ballots into the transfer case, hold them until, and then have the ballot box available. Not only is there more less expense that way, but as far as purchasing less ballot boxes, but also there's a huge expense in delivering these ballot boxes to the different locations for those larger counties where we actually have a delivery person deliver these things rather than having the supply judge bring them.
So there would be just one ballot box in each location, and then you would simply use transfer cases throughout the day?
Yes.
Is that the idea? What's the difference between a ballot box and a transfer case?
A transfer case might be a cardboard or metal box that doesn't have a slot in it, doesn't have access. It just opens up, you put the stuff in, you seal it, rather than a ballot box has two openings, an opening for a slot for the delivery of ballots and another opening on the other side. They're just more expensive and more bulky.
Okay. Thank you.
Rule 27.8.3.2.1. Once again, I agree with Jack on this one. Removing the this has to do with the delivery of ballots, what we call the midday pickup. It's very, very important to us, Central Count environment, to be able to start counting ballots in the middle of the day. The only way that we're going to keep not only the press but the public happy in getting these ballots counted in a timely manner. We don't want to be counting on Wednesday and Thursday. We need to start counting in the middle of the day. And we want to be able to pick up these ballots without breaking the seal of the boxes. The way the rule is now, I believe you'd have to stop voting. Say, everyone, stop. We have to stop voting. We have to pull open the ballots, open up the ballot box, start counting ballots in front of people, and I think that just makes people, the voter, very nervous. And our preference would be to either take that box as a whole, completely sealed, or to just simply make a quick transfer where we don't have to do a complete ballot inventory. Because I think not only this particular section, but the section at the end of the night, actually it's not in the rule, but in the statute, requires the ballots to be, for instance, broken into, you're supposed to separate them into Democrats and Republicans and nonpartisans and count them all out and do an inventory and fill out your ballot logs and all that. And it's really kind of an obsolete way of doing business. That might have been the case in the past where you had to break them up, where you actually counted ballots by Democrats, Republicans, nonpartisans. But in the central count environment, or even with a precinct counter, you no longer have to do that because the ballots, the machines do that for you. So it's just a matter of getting the laws and the rules to keep up with technology. And in this particular case, we're prepared to go either way. In fact, we've made plans to perform this particular function as it's designed in this particular rule. But I think it would be a better practice to not break open these boxes and count them in front of voters.
Quick question.
Sure.
So you think that even if you're just using a cardboard box, the fact that it's sealed, that really lessens any concerns about security?
Yes, I think you're using sealed. You know when that box has been broken open because the seal would tell you that. You also know that you also have, a Democrat and a Republican or two people of opposite parties always in the possession of those boxes. Plus, we have other, ballot inventory ways to know the number of ballots that should be there, the number of voters, the number of, there's different pieces, the number of voters, the number of voted ballots, and the number of unvoted ballots. Those three pieces combined, you get a very good idea of what's taking place. And in the end, you don't really need to do that in the middle of the day. In fact, you don't need to do that at the end of the day. That all comes out in the wash in the canvas. And in the canvas, you'll know if there was anything's happening incorrectly. And that's why we know that's the purpose of the canvas.
I have a question. I thought that you said that you need to be able to start counting in the middle of the day, and then I thought you just said the opposite of that. So,
well, keep in mind that we're operating with a on July. It's now June 30th, and so we're operating with these proposed rules, and we're making plans and contingency plans. So, you know, there's the ultimate way we'd like to do things, and there's the ways that things could happen. And right now, we're planning right now that as if these rules were going to pass. So we are planning on doing this inventory in the middle of the day, opening up the ballot box, doing the as this rule suggests, and then bring them back to our central location and start counting in the middle of the day. Now, the only difference would be is if this rule doesn't apply, we would just not count these ballots in front of voters. We would not do this inventory.
I see.
Okay.
Questions?
No.
27.8.3.2.2. This one was just a quick clarification. This rule requires three copies of the transfer log, which seems to contradict 27.8.2.2, which requires four copies. And I might have misread something there, but I'm just a little confused by that particular one. Rule 27.8.3.2.5. This one is very minor, but it says that the transfer logs should be put on the outside of the case. That would tend to be problematic in that a lot of times those things could get lost or they could get torn or ripped. We would rather put something inside the case. And that's very minor, but it just kind of goes to show the general theme of these rules. And I think I would agree with our friends from Douglas County in that sometimes these rules are maybe a little bit too specific. That if you give us the intent, some general guidelines, and let the clerks figure it out, sometimes works out a little bit better. But other than that, I will say I was very pleased with a lot of the rules corrections, especially the rules having to do with making sure that everyone is counting these ballots.
Mr. Munster.
Mike, sorry I didn't catch you before. If we can go back to 27.7.2, I'm concerned now that this is the second time we've heard that this might be a problem. And I think the reason it was put in there was because when they do a check mark, how much of that, the tail end of that, or how little, how do you guess the intent? We're trying to keep it consistent.
Sure.
So, I mean, how would we put it in rule that if it goes halfway through the target, or do you have any thoughts? Or just do you think this just needs to be eliminated and left up to the judges?
I think it just needs to be eliminated and left up to the judges.
So okay.
Just as, you know, there's other areas where, you know, it says if they circle them, you know, consistently, I think that we count those. We judge by their intent. So we can see that if someone is tail end of a check mark, it's pretty clear. Or if it's if you have an X that happens to extend into another box, I think that would be fairly clear.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, that's it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Cynthia Coleman. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Cynthia Coleman, Larimer County Clerk and Reporter's Office, and Elections Manager. And to save time and consistency, I will echo Douglas County and Denver County's remarks. I would simply like to point out one item, which I also submitted by email, my remarks. But I would like to point out in regards to Rule 27.8, State Statute 17501 states that no ballot box shall be reopened until the time for counting the ballots or the ballot cards therein, which seems to me that we are not to be opening ballot boxes once they are delivered to the polling site or vote center.
What was the site again?
That site was 17501, and there is also a similar one, that's for electronic ballot counting devices. 17301 is for paper ballots.
Thank you.
And you have significant detail for me in the email, so I won't go.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah. Cynthia, so do you feel comfortable if it is a close race and they start to inquire about the transportation of ballots that whatever limited things that might come out of rules, you guys will be comfortable answering?
I'll be perfectly comfortable in it. The way Larimer County has set up their processes is we have purchased about $10,000 in ballot boxes. We will use ballot boxes at our vote centers. We have sufficient number to do transport. We're planning on doing transport four times throughout the day. We have bipartisan teams of judges. We will place a seal over the ballot opening, over the ballot box opening, so no ballot can come out or be put in. You know, the purpose of the bipartisan teams was to have a check and balance to this system. And I think by having your seals, having your seal logs, having your bipartisan teams that are appointed by the party through caucus, we have security and transport the same process when the ballots are delivered and when they're picked up. I agree with Douglas County and Denver County. We need some flexibility. Each county is going to handle it differently, a small county, a medium county, and a large county. And we just need a little bit of flexibility. And, yes, I am very positive. It would be the same as for my mail-in drop-off ballots.
Yeah, I think we had that conversation. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? If not, I'm going to leave the rulemaking record open until the close of business on Wednesday. If anybody present or listening or whatever would like to submit additional written comments on the rules, please submit them to the Secretary of State's office by the close of business on Wednesday. I would like to thank participants for their written comments. Douglas County, Denver County, Larimer County all provided very good written comments, and that's really, really helpful when you take the time to put that on paper so that we don't lose track of what your points were. I should note for the record that we did receive written comments from others. We received written comments from Mesa County, from Rio Blanco County, from Alan Morrison of Fair Elections Network, Teak Simonton of Eagle County, Jefferson County's Susan Miller from Jefferson County, and Terry Malik from Special District Management Services Incorporated, Pitkin County, and I think that's it. But we really do appreciate the written comments, and all written comments will be taken into account in the final rules as adopted. If there's nothing else, then we'll go ahead and conclude the hearing. I really do appreciate everybody attending, and the meeting is adjourned. The time is 2:50 p.m. Thank you.